Horror Writers Podcast, episode number 36. All right, and welcome to another episode of the Horror Writers Podcast, the show with two horror authors discussing all things in the world of horror. I'm Zach Bohan, and with me, as always, is author Jay Thorne. How you doing, Jay?
What's up, Zach? How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing fabulous. So excellent. Just blowing through this and going to the pumpkin patch here in a little bit. So
nice. Good thing to do in October, right?
Yeah, should be fun. So, of course, when you guys listen or watch this, it'll probably be November. So, you know, gotcha. So
happy Thanksgiving.
So today we are going to kind of talk about one of our favorite genres of, you know, horror, science fiction, you know, something that Jay and I both love, and that's post-apocalyptic and dystopian fiction, movies, all that good stuff. Just kind of, you know, this genre's really been on the rise over the last few years, and we're just going to kind of discuss, like, you know, the why it's so popular, kind of what led to it being popular, classic stuff, all that kind of stuff. So Jay, what is, I guess, first off, like, what is it about dystopian or post-apocalyptic stuff that you love?
Yeah. I love, it's very primal. And I think for me, that's what's really attractive. And there's definitely a distinction between dystopian and post-apocalyptic, and it's, they're very similar and they get lumped together a lot, but really post-apocalyptic is usually, it's usually a story that's set after a catastrophic event. Whereas dystopian can be, sort of society spinning off in a pretty dark place. And they can be the same sometimes. You know, there could be a catastrophe that causes a dystopian society. So I always like to kind of preface with what I'm going to say, in that I am more a fan of the post-apocalyptic than I am dystopian. I think Hunger Games is probably a good example of a really popular dystopian franchise, so to speak. I personally like the post-apocalyptic genre because, as I mentioned, it's primal. And what I mean by prime was, I think in 2015, we are, Americans in particular, are surrounded by so much affluence and luxury and comfort. Overall, I mean, we all have problems, you know, sometimes our phones freeze up, and sometimes the line at Starbucks is like six people deep. So we do have problems. You know, I know it sucks. But I think there's something really attractive about sort of having your existence stripped down to the bare necessity and only having to focus on what really matters, survival. And it's not pretty. And I don't think any of us really want that. But I think we kind of get that vicarious feeling through this type of literature. And I think it's a main reason why The Walking Dead is so huge. I mean, yes, it's about zombies, but it's also about this sort of primal existence. Like, you strip everything away and then you survive with what's left. And I think for a lot of people, that's a really attractive idea. Not one they necessarily want to be in, but it looks really attractive. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm a good point, and thank you for, you know, making sure to point out kind of the difference between post-apocalyptic and dystopian. You named two great examples. You know, the Hunger Games is definitely you know, probably the the best, you know, recent kind of example of dystopian. You know, another one that came out recently this year would be Mad Max Fury Road. Is definitely a dystopian. I mean, you hit on a lot of stuff. I think that the interesting thing to me is just like, kind of what you mentioned about, you know, what we have so many luxuries, and there's so many things that people are just, you know, are used to, like that they take for granted that we didn't even have, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, you couldn't, you know, wake up in the morning and roll over and grab a little device like this and, you know, see what happened while you were asleep, like look at the news or see what your friends did or whatever. Like you'd actually have to, you know, get up and go watch the news, or you'd have to actually talk to somebody, you know, God right. forbid we talk to somebody. Yeah, I mean, if all that went away in an instant, I mean, it'd be really interesting to see, you know, what the hell would happen. I think that that's, you know, you mentioned The Walking Dead, and I think that's the best, kind of the best example, as far as the post-apocalyptic stuff goes that a lot of people will be able to relate to, where, you know, this, of just the people having to adapt, like if this happened, like how would you adapt to this new world that is suddenly thrust upon you? And I think it's interesting, and it's also, you know, in its own way, it's pretty horrifying, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's natural. And I like, this is just a theory, and I'm sure people will tell me I'm wrong in the comments. Hopefully we'll stay consistent with the show and make sure I'm always wrong. But I get this feeling too. It's the reason why people go camping and why they go hunting and they go on fishing trips. Like I think the way we live now, and this is real soapboxy, so I apologize, but like I think we're really far away from sort of what would be considered more natural, and there's some sort of internal feeling or drive that we all have to kind of be closer to that more natural place. And so I mean, if you look at it, like camping is not fun. Like, I don't know if you've ever, I've taken my kids camping. It's not fun, but we keep going back. Like there's something like to sit around the fire at night and just look up at the sky or talk to each other, or to have to like cook your food on that fire. Like there's something really appealing about it that I can't quite describe. And I think in general, I think there's a feeling that, boy, if we could get back to a more primitive place, life is simpler and not longer necessarily or easier, but simpler.
Yeah. Well, I hate camping. So, you know, so I guess if any of this stuff happened, I'd be screwed.
Yeah. I'm not looking for you then when the zombies come.
Don't. I can't go camping because I'm terrified of snakes. So that's all I would think about is, you know, I mean, a snake got in our warehouse recently that was like this big, and I like flipped out.
She screamed like a little girl.
I didn't scream, but I did tell the guy who caught it I was going to fire him if he brought it near me. So, so what is kind of, I know you're really into this subject. So what's kind of your earliest, you know, memory of like, or what was kind of the thing that got you into this genre? From what you remember.
Yeah, from what I can remember, it was two things. It was Mad Max, original Mad Max, Mel Gibson film. That was just so different and captured my imagination in a way that I hadn't been exposed to that kind of thing before. I think the other part of it for me, and I know this is going to be different because I'm just a year or two older than you, but when I was growing up, that was the heart of the Cold War. And there were a lot of movies and a lot of stories on the news about, you know, what if the Soviet Union unleashed all its nukes on us and what would we do? And so there was a British film called Threads. It came out in the early 80s, if you've never seen it, it's brutal. Like there was an American version, I think called The Day After, and it was a network television movie, but it was the story of a nuke going off and then what would happen. The American version was much more like The Walking Dead, like people looting 7-Elevens and grabbing Hershey bars. The British version was way more realistic and graphic. That was like people being melted. That was like radiation sickness. So at that time, I think there was a sense, a visceral sense that like, wow, this could all end at any minute. And if it did, like, what would we be left with? And then you get a film like Mad Max that comes out and you're like, okay, a few hundred years later, that's probably what you're left with. So I think for me, I was a product of the time. And I think that's always been something that's fueled my imagination for better or worse. Now you are a year or two older than me. So I'm assuming you didn't have that same type of situation in your teenage years. So what brought you to the genre?
No, No. you know, my, I'm definitely was late to the party on this. You know, it was probably just within the last, 10, 12 years or so that I really got into this stuff. Funny enough, and I've mentioned this a lot, is kind of the thing that got me into this initially was the Bible, was Revelation. I've said this before, that Revelation is probably the greatest horror story ever told. I have an obsession with Revelation and just that whole type of post-apocalyptic story, and kind of that got my mind wandering, and I was like, huh, I wonder what's out there in this type of media. And then probably the first movie that I saw that kind of got me into it was I Am Legend. So like I said, I'm pretty late to the party on it. But I Am Legend, the first time I saw it, you know, it, I was just like, wow, this is really crazy if this actually happened. And you were like the last person on earth, essentially. So then after that, it was kind of, I went back Mad Max, mm-hmm. The Road, which is, I know is one of your favorites. At least the book. I don't know how you feel about the movie, and maybe we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
It just kind of went from there. You mentioned the Hunger Games. Like I love the Hunger Games. Like I read the books, like, you know, and really enjoyed it. So that's kind of my first experience. And I just kind of went from there. I Am Legend. It's funny, that movie took me about 4 hours to watch because, and this is kind of a spoiler alert, if you haven't seen I Am Legend, Will Smith, spoiler, but, when his dog dies, the German Shepherd, and my wife and I, we have a German Shepherd, and he was a puppy at the time. So we actually had to pause the movie for like an hour just to like hang out with him. So I mentioned The Road. I know The Road is like, you know, one of your favorite books ever, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, it is.
Why don't you talk about that a little bit, and kind of the way The Road has influenced what you like about the genre and even your writing?
Yeah. Well, I don't even know how to begin to describe Cormac McCarthy. So if you've never read any of his stuff, and you go and you pick up The Road, you're going to read the first 10 pages and be like, what the hell is this? McCarthy, he did, No Country for Old Men. He's a true maverick. Like I'm having a hard time even describing his style. So, I guess you kind of have to immerse yourself in it. He does not follow standardized rules of writing or grammar. Like, I'm pretty sure in The Road, there's no quotation marks, so you don't necessarily know who's speaking, who's narrating. You're not always sure of whether it's what tense it's in. And so if you can kind of gut it out through the like, what the hell is this phase of the first, 10 or 15 pages or percent, whatever you're reading on, it's captivating, and it's so dark, and it's the kind of darkness that if there's darkness but no hope, I think it's hard to plow through that. And when you finish, you feel kind of robbed in a way. So there is an element of hope to this, but it's a glimmer, and I don't want to spoil, because it's so good. And in this case too, I would say like take the low hanging fruit. If you know nothing about The Road, either read the book or watch the movie, whichever's easiest for you. Either one, it's a masterful story. It's brutally simple. It's very believable, and it's heart wrenching. I don't know if I say any more about it, I'll give it away. I'm gonna cop out on that. So what I'll do instead, I'm going to throw a few other post-apocalyptic dystopian stories in here for people who are finding this for the first time that I think are really good and sort of underrated. The first one is Waterworld with Kevin Costner. That movie got totally panned. He got ripped apart for it, but it's sort of Mad Max on the ocean. And it's kind of silly, but if you think about sort of what's happening with climate change now, I think history is going to look back at it with a little kinder than the contemporary film critics did. But I would definitely check out Waterworld. One of my favorites, it didn't go under the radar, but it didn't have the blockbuster success of like I Am Legend, is The Book of Eli. Mm. The Book of Eli is a post-apocalyptic dystopian. It has everything you'd want in a Mad Max film with an incredible story and an incredible twist at the end. Like it's brilliant. It's everything you'd want in that plus a really good story. So I would recommend checking out those films as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually haven't seen The Book of Eli, but I just bought it. Like there was on Vudu.com, they had like they're doing a sale, and I got that and I Am Legend for like $7 or something. I have it to watch. It's good to hear someone who liked it because I've heard mixed things. So, of course you did also just say you liked Waterworld. So I don't know how much weight you're,
I know I did. I really did. And plus, with Book of Eli too, you got Mila Kunis. So,
Nice. Yeah, very true. Right? So and it's funny you brought up the thing with Waterworld, like, you know, you're very right. Like history could look back later and be like, wow, that was very, very right. Kevin Costner still sucked in it, but it was, you know, the people who wrote it got it right. But now I'm actually just I haven't seen Waterworld since I was probably like 8 years old or something. So I really can't speak on that. But maybe I'll go back and watch it after this.
Well, the general concept is that, that instead of having a dry barren planet, it's an ocean covered planet. And so the currency becomes soil. Like, which is really, really cool concept. And wow. So, yeah, maybe Costner wasn't the best, you know, best character to cast in that. I don't know. But like the movie and the idea itself is pretty good.
Yeah, he's got to be better than he was in Robin Hood. So, you know, where he didn't even attempt to have an accent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, and just, you know, we kind of mentioned Mad Max and, you know, Mad Max was obviously way ahead of its time. I mean, mm-hmm. way, way, way ahead of its time. So maybe a couple other things to mention that are way ahead of its time as well, that, you know, if you're kind of looking for some stuff that's classic, The Stand, which you might be able to see the book over my shoulder or this shoulder, I guess, right there on the shelf. But The Stand was also way ahead of its time. I mean, The Stand came out, what was it, 1979? I mean, late 70s, early 80s, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, pretty much any post-apocalyptic story that comes out now is generally like influenced by The Stand. Like there's no way it can't be, you know? And another one, that had been remade into actually a pretty decent movie not too long ago. But War of the Worlds is definitely, I've never read it. So I don't know if it's like, you know, if it's hard to read or not.
It is kind of hard to read, honestly.
Yeah. I could see that. You know, worst case scenario though, in my opinion, you know, the movie with Tom Cruise was actually a pretty entertaining movie.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, War of the Worlds is kind of known, for the radio broadcast. So, you know, people, like sitting around their old time radios back in the 50s or whenever it was, you know, like listening to it, And so yeah, that was way ahead of its time. And actually, funny enough, it was kind of the way that people consumed it was way ahead of its time. If you think about people listening to audiobooks and stuff now, so it was, you know, in a lot of ways that book and that story kind of set the stage for a lot of stuff. But that's a classic post-apocalyptic story.
Yeah, that's Orson Welles. And if you don't know the story behind the story, check it out. I don't remember the exact date when that broadcast, but the War of the Worlds got a lot of attention because people thought it was a real news broadcast. There was some really nasty, dark stuff that happened during that broadcast because people thought it was real. Wow. So it's definitely worth checking out. Even listening to some of the original radio broadcasts is really cool and definitely worth a listen. And it's also funny you mentioned that because I think the whole alien invasion sci-fi genre is really post-apocalyptic. I mean, a lot of that alien invasion has to do with the battle with the aliens, but a lot of that is afterwards. Like, then you get something like, was it District 9, which is kind of shot as a found footage film, but yeah. It's really sci-fi, which is really post-apocalyptic. Like, there's a lot there. So it's a really deep and interesting subgenre, I believe.
Yeah, District 9, that's a great example. That movie's awesome. Yeah. So that's a really, really, really good example. And just the way that movie's filmed, like you said, it's kind of like a found footage movie. I'm really excited to see what he does with Alien, assuming it gets off its feet.
Yeah.
So it should be cool. It's funny, we're running low on time, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up. It's funny how you brought up the whole Orson Welles thing and how people kind of thought that was real, because, you know, of course you can go back to the Blair Witch Project, and people thinking that was real, but even more recent, people thinking The Martian was real and a true story is really, really, and that's more comedic now than any.
Yeah. Sad.
And really sad, you know, but like that whole story about people thinking The Martian was a true story was actually funny. So, in case anyone's watching, you're not sure, we haven't actually gone to Mars yet. So
no, we have not. And, you know, and it would not be Matt Damon. If someone did go to Mars, it would not be Matt Damon.
It does not. Though there was that whole thing going around where people, I don't know if you've seen that meme that said, you know, all the money we spent trying to get Matt Damon safe, like because of Saving Private Ryan and Interstellar and now The Martian, like he's always seems to get stranded. So,
quit leaving Matt behind, would you?
He, you know, but he's just like, you know, keeps coming back. So, but well, anyways, well, that about does it for this episode. So, you got any final thoughts?
No, it was fun. Really enjoyed it.
Very,
like always.
Very good. Yep. So awesome. Hopefully, you guys have some good recommendations. And if you know anything we left out, because there's tons of examples of stuff, you know. Feel free to talk in the comments, and we will see you next week. See you, Jay.
Later, man.
Thanks for listening to the Horror Writers Podcast. If you have any thoughts or questions about today's show, please feel free to leave us a comment. Subscribe on iTunes and on YouTube. If you like us, please leave us a review on iTunes. The Horror Writers Podcast can be found on the web at thehorrorwriterspodcast.com. All graphics provided by Johnny Diggs at diggscreative.com. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode.